Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Good morning and welcome everyone once again to the Motherland Fort Salem AfterBuzz TV After Show. I am your host, Kevin Allen, and once again I am joined by my unit, Brian Santos.
Hello, so excited to be here with you guys. It's Brian early in the morning. I mean, it's not really Brian early, but you know, it's quarantine Brian early. So I'm ready to jump into this with you all.
Gunnar Texera.
I cannot wait to talk with a very special guest, even if it's early in the morning for quarantine time.
Yeah, that's right. We normally don't do things in the morning. Usually we have a night show, but we were a little messy and so we had to postpone. But to get us back into gear, we have our very own drill sergeant with us, Demetra McKinney.
Coming straight at you. Hi, guys.
How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you guys for giving me a reason to get dressed up and out of bed today.
Absolutely.
You're welcome. Our pleasure. I'm thrilled to have you be part of the show to begin with, but especially for this most recent episode. Okay, let's just dive right in because that's what they did. They jumped straight in right where we left off. So, we're going to get to City Drop. We're going to get to the training exercise, all the new intel that came their way, and the baby's very first mission. Right off the bat, guys, what did you think, Gunner?
This was such a kick-ass episode, and Anacostia, this whole episode, is probably one of my favorites. I've been loving her all season, so it's been so cool.
Oh, absolutely, hey, Bryant.
So, Demetra, I have to be honest with you. When Anacostia was first introduced, I was a little bit skeptical. I was like, I think she has something up her sleeve, but loved her the last few episodes, especially this one. And this was just such a great episode for everybody, showing so many different layers, so many different nuances of each character, what they're going through, what they're thinking, and how it affects their decisions. So I love that so much. And obviously it was just so like amazing to see the girls just kick butt and those spree, like destroy those trucks like nobody's business. So I loved it. And then we had a heartbreaking moment, so I'm sure we're going to talk about that.
Oh, we're going to get into everything. But for first, Demetra, just as an outside viewer of television, how did you find this episode?
Well, first off, what I want to say is in preparation, we all try to make sure that we live tweet. We want to be connected to the audience. We want to hear their feedback, make sure they're getting all the bullet points of the storylines and really connecting with the characters. Mm-hmm. So we've usually kind of tried to do like a reread of the old scripts, you know, try to catch up. But I was really kind of hell bent on making sure that I saw this with fresh eyes with everybody else so that I could have a true perspective. No bias, although I feel like it's an amazing show naturally. But watching this episode and really getting to see some of the intricacies come to light with everybody. I mean, it's so multifaceted, so multidimensional already. But then when you see each character really start to peel back those layers, as you said, and how each of those layers bump and clash and combine with each of the other ones, it was just really exhilarating to watch. The action scenes were dope AL stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, I want, you know, I'm in my living room and I'm just like, ain't doing nothing, but I just felt like I was so invested and so into it. So yeah, it was a great episode for me.
It absolutely was. I mean, a really strong episode, not just because it kind of went with this genre shift into being a bigger, more blockbustery kind of episode of television, but also it really focused essentially on this one storyline. We stepped aside a little bit to get General Alder's perspective and with raiding the Spree Armory, but it only just to influence what was happening with our main unit. So let's follow them in to City Drop. They dive right in to this exercise, but as soon as they're on the ground, I mean, it's still a training regimen. They have time to like collect themselves, line up or be orderly. It's very much a school setup. However, our team gets right into it because Tally unfortunately has a rough landing, which considering the odds, someone was bound to. Rael tends to her. And I did not expect that this is how the revelation would get to Rael.
Same.
And boy, oh boy, was that bad timing for everyone.
Yeah.
Brian, you had a thought. I could see it.
I do. And
Elliot Lawrence's writing, you know, he gives you little nuggets at the very beginning. And then as you get into the thick of things and you start to go back, and you're like, oh, that's what, you know? So yeah, I was sitting there like, no, she's going to know. I knew that already. Darn it. You know, so that's when you know you've got good writing. Like, it drew me in. Like, I was brand new to it.
Seriously. Well, I'm going to go for it. I'm so sorry to the chat. I hope I don't get canceled again. But I have to just say that Rael did not do it for me this episode, especially in that moment when she saw Tally, like when she saw that from Tally, she could have easily like trusted her sister. Like we think she's going to and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that was going to happen. But no, she's like, oh my God, how could you do that? You know, that's my girl. She's on the spree. And I'm like, honey, there was a balloon. There was a blue balloon. Like what more evidence do you need, sister? So I was just so confused.
I was confused as well. Cause it's like, it's not you not trusting Tally. It's now you not trusting what you saw.
But yes. No, see, I have to add to that because as much she doesn't understand it, I am very concerned with how she's wasn't pressing Anacostia about the like dream she thought she had because Anacostia kidnapped her in the middle of the night. I really thought right after she learned the information and they got in line, I was like, she got Tally, now she's going to Anacostia. She'll lose it on Anacostia right now. And she never really did.
I wish she would.
I know.
Step to you, girl. You would have just been a pack.
It's so rough, so fast. But she's confused. She's still reeling from that weird dream she had. And now seeing that Tally knows something and realizing the reason Scylla is possibly gone is because of it, she's going to be mad because she knows, in reality, partially, Tally and Anacostia having the conversation and knowing that they think Scylla is spree got her abducted somehow, or she assumes that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. Demetria, yes, you girl. Have something you want to share?
But just to play a little bit of devil's advocate for Rael, right?
Do it.
Yes.
Who here has not fallen in love stupid?
So true.
Like, when you look back, you're like, how did I not? I mean, it was right there, you know? And I mean, love is blinding, especially for somebody who came in with their already preconceived things about what this was, that everybody was kind of against her. This isn't right. And she's found this connection, this thing that made her whole. She's lost her mother. She's away from home. She's around all of these really militant people. Anacostia have been all up in her stuff. And now there's this thing. And yes, she is still reeling from this dreamlike thing that she went through where she realizes that the love of her life is basically still alive. So there's just a whole lot of different emotions that I think she had to kind of process a little bit. Don't you think? Can we get a little bit of slack?
I agree. Because the concern for her in that moment was not that Scylla is spree. She was kind of dismissing that very important piece of information. But it was more about, you all knew she was alive while I suffered in not knowing this and didn't clue me in. So that was her initial reaction, was that she knowing that, oh, Scylla is in fact alive and you all knew it the whole time? Because Gunnar, like you said, it was a dream from her perspective seeing her. So yeah, that's where her focus lies. Now, I do agree with you as well, Brian and Gunnar, that as it went on, like she was really kind of being willfully ignorant about the spree connection and just coming up with excuses to not trust that fact. That's like not even presented to her, like once she got herself at this point.
Yes. I want to jump to the chat real quick. They're like going off on this. So it's crazy. They're actually split. So thank you guys. Cause usually everyone is Team Rael, but I know that some people are seeing the light. So
way to make it more divisive, Brian.
But everybody in the chat, thank you all so much for being here. Yours, Grandpa, Adam, I, Takija, like it's amazing. They have so many great insights about the show. Some of them love Rael, some of them don't. Some of them think that she needs to get her emotions in check. And I will agree on that one.
Yeah.
I think that's the bigger thing, is really just being able to kind of push it aside, or not push it aside, but at least get pushed through it to deal with the issue at hand, you know, because I feel like that's where everything went awry, is that she couldn't get it together fast enough for them to collect themselves to get in line and do what they needed to do, you know? Okay.
Exactly. You got to leave your baggage at the door. As soon as they cross that chain link fence, they're in this training exercise. And something that I definitely took note of when they were being instructed by their superiors was that they were encouraged not to hold back, and that the people who are effectively acting as the Spree will not hold back either. Now I'm going to go out ahead and just say that that was a bad idea up front, because they've seen how surprising these cadets have been, especially the Bellwether unit. So they probably shouldn't have told them that. And find out later, they definitely shouldn't have. But it's for all intents and purposes, this is legit. And oh man, was this the worst possible scenario for Abigail? Not only is her team, who's kind of been a little wishy-washy as far as focus is concerned, not focused now, but one of them is actively challenging the lieutenants, and the other one is
disconnected. Kind of
she's kind of between her leg and between focusing on trying to get Rael back in to her good graces. She's elsewhere too. Like, this could not have gone worse for Abigail.
And then Abigail adds to it by the reality of, you know, okay, so Scylla is Spree. Spree killed my cousin. That means at the worst moment. Like, yes, I understand they said for everybody to use whatever they had to. This is a true life, quote unquote, situation. But there was still rules of engagement that she completely neglected once that reality started to hit her. So
we're looking at
a group of girls, this unit that is the most ununified they've been in the worst possible moment.
Yeah, at the point where they got hit with the car alarm and suffered a plague, like, I just thought they were out. I thought that was it for them.
I know, oh my God. And
I was pleasantly surprised to see that was not in fact the case, that they essentially had a second chance. And then even more so, they're quarreling. This never works for me, come on. Their quarreling is what kind of got them ahead with the other unit. I'm assuming the Spree were going to give the element of surprise and just kind of ambush all of the sleeping cadets, and they got the jump on that. So okay, good, happy accident. But yes, like when Abigail went a little wild there. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We gotta send love to Abigail for Tori this week, because Tori would be the biggest person here, like going to bat for her sister. But I do agree that Abigail, she was dealing with so much, and I don't know. I have this weird thing with Abigail. It's like, I feel like she was so, like, she was a little bit more right, you know, in that to be more upset than Rael was, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like because, but see, it's different with Abigail, because at that same token, she should have understood from a military perspective, you know. Once Tali said, I couldn't say anything because I was given orders, Abigail should have been like, okay, I understand completely. But I think that's where it kind of shown the cracks. And, you know, she puts on this front that she's so 1,000% military, but at the same time, she's still human. So she's like, okay, I understand you were given orders, but that's like my cousin. You, like, she was the reason she's dead, you know? So it's such a struggle, but I don't know. I mean, just sending love to Abigail for Tori.
Well, Abigail, go ahead, Demetria. No, you.
It adds to what Adil was saying to her last episode. You know, you know what war is. You glorify it. You think that you've got everything figured out because you come from this lineage and you're so grand with it. But then you really, really step into those combat boots and you realize that you're in it. It's not just a war and a soldier. It is a person of a battle.
Yeah.
I feel that.
The entire Bellwether identity is intertwined with war and combat, to the point where it's hard to distinguish between the two, being a Bellwether and being a soldier. So now that she's really getting a taste for what that second part of the Bellwether identity is, it's starting to open her up her eyes a little bit. Yeah, and that's, I think, also why we, as outside of viewers, always see her her strict devotion to the military as that, when actually it's just strict devotion to her family. But because, again, they're so intertwined, it's now we see, okay, this is what the difference is. Yeah, when it's about her cousin, it matters more.
And I think also the more human side of her, in the, when she is attacking the Spree agent in the, like, session, how you said they were probably going in for an attack when they were sleeping, which made me realize, I was just like, did they just stumble upon these people, or were they gonna go hit the sleeping cadets? And you see Abigail a bit lose it, not out of anything more than a bit of PTSD and rage of I was just in the situation where Spree attacked me and I'm stuck and trapped and overwhelmed, and then had to go.
And her career is falling apart too. Yeah. Like, that's also on her mind, I'm sure.
Yeah. And having to depend on other people for everything to go right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that just happened to Charvel, that same thing, a kind of surprise attack that she didn't see coming. And so she's like, oh girl, like not, I ain't it. Mm-hmm. I ain't it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're right. I mean, not just happened to Charvel, but also happened to her. She was ambushed at the wedding. So yeah, she's been through a rough and tumble once already, and she's probably learned a great deal from that. Okay, cool. Not just her though. Raelle is also out and about on her own little side mission, and not ambushed, but is certainly surprised by one of her officers who she recognizes, but doesn't recognize her back. And that's fun. Yeah, Gunner. Gunnar, I see you doing that. Jess, please give me a thought.
The second I saw the lieutenant,
Helen,
for a quick moment, I almost thought, wait, did Scylla escape? Is she out? But I realized, no, Raelle's going to learn more and more. And I don't think even Raelle realized that even when Anacostia and that lieutenant were questioning her, I was kind of thinking, Raelle, why are you talking? You never go with the machine, you never answer questions. And now this time you do, you just need more information and why they know Scylla was deeper of an agent, a sleeper agent into this group more than you realize. And so I was kind of a little ashamed of Raelle. I was like, you would have so questioned this. You must be so distraught and emotional right now. You can't even realize that they're questioning more so about Scylla, and they have to figure it out, because what are the odds that this lieutenant who doesn't recognize you, but when you're talking to her, was talking about your girlfriend who also is now Spree. Like, make the connection there.
Yeah, like, it took Anacostia to literally spell it out in front of her, for Raelle to finally come to that conclusion. And when you lay it out, like, it's so hard to deny. And I kind of give it up to Raelle for at least not trying to fight it then.
Yeah, because you know, like Demetra said, Anacostia's not the one. She would have just been like, girl, like, she would have been like, get it together.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the culmination of everything, from linking with Tally to Lieutenant Graves, to just everything that she's had to see, feel, experience, and finally having a chance to really, I think that walk may have been, you know, she's kind of sorting through things as she's on this hunt for Anacostia. But once Anacostia has to lay it out for her, like, girl, she don't love you. And you have nothing else. There is no rebuttal. Like, I felt actually heartbroken for her, because as much as you wanted her to get it, you could see that getting it really kind of broke her. And I was just like, oh, God, no, not the Raelle.
I could see it in the performances, both from it was confined because military settings, but it was so deep, the sorrow in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that was as sparse as a moment that was, it was a very heavy one, and I thought it was so good. Good, especially amongst all of the clatter of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things I want to point out before we get into the turning of the tides here. I really enjoy that, watching Tally through the last training exercise in the hallway. I feel like, Gunner, you've mentioned that she has this ability of sight and can see what most others are not able to, and that definitely gets utilized later. But another thing I'm starting to notice about Tally, and granted I'm her cheerleader, is she has leadership potential, and I'm really hoping we get to see more of that down the road. She really took charge throughout this whole debacle in her unit. It got to a point where she just had to have put on this attitude of, look, I'm not taking your shit anymore. But not to say that she didn't give one anymore. She wasn't completely over it. She still cared for her unit. And when she snapped to Raelle right before Raelle went to go do her little side mission, that, like, you can't just leave. It wasn't one of mocking or demeaning. It was still out of concern, but just said with that tough exterior she had to put up.
Mm-hmm.
And later, when both of them are just bickering at each other, she goes, all right, cool. You do this, you do this. I'm going to do this. And it was a very successful mission, all in all.
First off, I'll make the stand. I'm the biggest Tally fan on this panel. Just want to make that very clear right now.
All right. Okay. I'll let you have it.
When I saw her on episode 1, I said, that's my girl. That's my She's definitely my second favorite for sure, because I just thought she's the baddest of them all. But this episode was, for me, a bit where I disliked Tally the most because of how detached she had to be, of how she's always the emotional one. And not even like, oh, she's emotional, she's a mess, just passionate and expressive, to then go to, I'm not taking your crap anymore. And how we said before, when she gets so into a moment, she can also so detach. I see it's something with the way Jessica Laura Sutton like acts, is that she, her whole face just goes, I'm not emotional anymore. It's like her, like the Vampire Diaries kind of concept, like, is off. And it's so impressive that she can just flip like that and so in touch with her emotions to be, I'm in military mode, I'm in combat. There are no problems. We left our baggage at the door, so go put yours back there too.
Yeah, sure. I don't see that as being detached. I see that as her putting on her game face.
Yes.
Like I was saying with the you can't just leave moment, she still is trying to connect with her.
I guess
stay connected to her unit.
Part of her connectivity comes in understanding that when one part of the unit is broken, the other parts have to step in. And I think being the person who was the most naive, the most unaccustomed to life outside of her matrifocal world, coming in, being the one with vision. First off, a leader has to have that, period, point blank. And the fact that that is her gift and she's finally starting to come into the knowledge and acceptance of that is really, really strong for me. Her emotional attachment to everybody and what this is still there, but understanding that, again, we have to check our emotions at the door. And after everything she went through with Buttonwood, you know, feeling that heartbreak and really having to turn that off in order to be there for her unit, while having to be there for the military, while having to be protecting Raelle in the way that she was, I think she's learned a lot more lessons that were revealed in her stature in the midst of what this training session was. She was absolutely one of my favorite characters to watch this episode. I'm team Tally all day. Jessica, you did that, baby.
Yes, Gunnar, I would agree with you in that sense, but I do also see the point where it's more just like she sees the brevity of the situation. Like she sees that like she has to like get it together now because it's now or never in this training. And then obviously, again, even more so when it became a real life.
It probably is my own personal struggles in the sense of how that's why I relate so much with Tally, how emotional she is.
Yeah.
So attached, it just kind of hurts me. It's like, you're an emotional person, don't turn it off. But it is out of maturity, out of respect for her career. My job is the military. My duty is to serve and not let my personal issues get in the way of it. So that is very true. I do.
I absolutely see that.
Going through all of her technical difficulties, and then Tally was still running around like Little Miss Sunshine at the same time.
That'd almost be too insensitive. That'd be just as insensitive. That's right.
Yeah.
I love that.
One other cadet I just want to shout out in this point in the series is Libby. Libby is the name? Is that where I'm picking up from?
Libba Swy, yeah.
Libba Swy.
I wrote to myself, like, when they get out of, they have a more or less successful-ish, you know, nothing's perfect mission, and she steps up, and the Bellwether unit kind of gets their stuff together, and Libba's still, like, throwing shade. Like, she's just never satisfied with the Bellwether unit or any strides they make. Nothing is ever good enough for her. But it did have a different tone. It was one less of her being on a high horse and more being like, hey, you have issues, not me anymore, you've got issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anywho, so they continue on this regiment and they're all running around, and then they get the word from the superiors that their training exercise is now ceased, which there was the initial shock of like, oh God, we all failed. But in fact, they're gonna step it up.
Yeah, I'll go into deployment. No war college for any of you.
Yeah, quite the opposite.
It's so real.
Sorry, what was that?
It gets real now.
Yeah, yeah. It got real right then. They suited up and booted up and they were on the choppers again for their first mission. While they were away playing war games, Alder got the intel, or took advantage of the intel of taking down the Spree Armory. It literally blew up in their face, and instead they now have to go after these two trucks that are on route carrying the entire armory. Yeah. So the only people who are able to do that, and I don't know why I'm recapping, you all were there, is our team. So what did you think of that decision, first of all? Gunner, go ahead and say it. It's a controversial decision no matter what you decide. So, like,
in theory, if you are training these witches to be the soldiers and the witches they are, in theory, they should be capable. Yes, they've only been there for weeks, maybe a month or two. So it is sending level one characters to go fight the boss in level 10, which is totally unrealistic. But if they are being trained properly, because we have one of the best drill sergeants around, they can take care of it. But it's still very risky. And as we talk more about how this all played out, I'm gonna lose it on Alder because at the end of the conversation. So,
yeah. Okay.
I want to chime in because I didn't disagree because I thought that it was great, but the fact that she was really like, this is all we have, like literally, girl, like where is the rest of the military, honey? Because I'm like, she literally was like, oh, well, actually, no, she said they're the closest. Mm-hmm. They can get there the fastest. So I guess that makes sense. But if really like there could not be anybody that can like get on a jet plane and get there or like do some teleportation, I don't know, just throwing some thoughts out there into the world. But it was definitely like a kind of crazy decision that of course she had to make in the moment because she knew that it was really a matter of life or death. So obviously it was a tough decision because she had to make that choice, which again she made in the end of the couple we're having here to try and, you know, I guess like sacrifice or use against the possibility of losing millions or many. So it's always that military struggle.
Yes girl, please.
Tell us your thoughts.
Underdig what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. I understand that there is no fair way to fight in war. Okay. Mm-hmm. I understand that decisions have to be made. Some of them are not the most favorable. Now, like you said, the girls are very, very talented, but they don't know their own strength. They don't know their own power. And again, they are tier one. They are very, very new to this. They're going through their basic rite of passage during city drop. Okay. Now, understanding that they were the closest, yeah, okay, I get it. You have to try to send something there to try to stop something. But even if she had said, you know, okay, start them that way, we will get some forces, as you said, on the way, reinforcements, you know? And then you got to think about the president of the whole country of it all. Like, you're bringing extra fire down on an entity that's already been scrutinized and obviously scrutinized. So, yes, I understand that Alder needed that win against the Spree, but I felt like it was a more self-serving decision. What the country needed to happen. Like, yes, we definitely need to get there, but I don't feel like that was her main initiative. Oh. In my mind, she was like, I need this win or I'm going to lose it. And she just...
Yeah, so for me, it was more along the lines of what you're saying. I thought that the decision, and granted, it's hard to say what other options are because we don't know how this world works yet. We don't know if they have fighter jets that can just like zip right in or not, or right. Teleport. But okay, cool. So if an option is to get all of the soldiers who are currently at city drop involved, well, it's not just the level one cadets. You also have the soldiers who are supposedly experienced enough to pretend to be Spree and while keeping themselves and the people they're fighting safe. So that requires a certain level of experience and talent. So I was like, great, mm-hmm. We could put them at the front of the flying V and then have all the cadets like as reserve or whatever. I thought the decision was the best in the situation, but upon execution of it, it became more and more of a bad idea and more about one of us, like just snuff this out really quick. It was the finality of it that bothered me. There was a distinction made earlier in the episode between that, like, we neutralize a target, we don't go past that. So you neutralize, you don't eliminate. And granted, they kind of flub the words a little bit later, but they're training soldiers, not assassins. So to me, there was no reason why this unit of experienced soldiers backed up by new cadets could take on, and not the whole Spree army, just a couple of truck drivers and some munitions. And the decision made sense to me, but when it got further in the line in this mission and it was like, okay, we have to completely obliterate an entire truck full of gunpowder, like that's where I was like, I know there's another option with that. And I know you can do it without having the truck drive head on at you.
Mm-hmm. That one had me shook.
That's where Alder lost me.
Mm-hmm. I just still give it up to her for, you know, the witch daddy. So I'm just going to still stand her.
It It was so great effect and a great idea. And this is where we see Anacostia even being the great leader that she is, says, okay, if this is my mission, I'm going to do what's best. I think it's smartest, and be even kind of creative, like, oh, I have this wild idea. Let's go for it. And it did work. I think it was just a matter of the explosives inside the truck that caused the reaction that it did. I think she also didn't factor that in, but wasn't even prepared for how much of that was going to do. And it's like you said, why weren't the lieutenants and the ones who were doing the training session in the front of that be doing this prepared wind strike, is what it's called? Yes, wind strike.
Mm-hmm. The first one, yeah, it was wind strike. The second one, they said just like in the rough room, so I don't remember what that was.
The thing first, and having the cadets back it up, which is a little bit extra force. So that was the only part that really bugged me. Chose, especially with Libba and everything, I was like, how are they at the front of this V?
And like, granted, I loved that Quartermain was telling, okay, Raelle, you go do this. Tali, I need your skill set here. Like, this was a big step up for me just in Quartermain. I loved watching her in action. Seeing her be the drill sergeant and kind of having to play a very specific role where she can only reveal so much of her skill set and her intentions, you know, makes it a troubling character as a television viewer. But now that they're in the thick of it, this is real. It's not an exercise. It's not a test. We got to see who Quartermain truly is. And I thought she performed marvelously.
Yep.
Yes.
And she got my team involved, you know, and I love that. But when I saw a couple of other people ducking out, I was like, I know there was a better way to set this up.
Yes.
I agree with that. Thank you for that. When we were reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, because she's really stressing the unity. She's really stressing the integrity of what this is, despite her personal feelings. And again, it goes in line with that thing we've been talking about, the theme of everybody having to put themselves aside for the greater good, which is why I was like, you know, okay, yes, I understand the decision. What I don't like with Alder was the intention behind it, in my mind. Mm-hmm. One of the things I will say is, even in that V formation, one person who stuck to her guns no matter what, she didn't abandon ship, but she was not a part of that killing of the civilians, was Tali. Tali did not participate in that second strike. She literally stood back and was like, I want no part of that. And I just had
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
It was so.
Did not participate at all.
Wow.
And that's what I found so interesting. I almost took it out of the perspective of she's being so in the mission with City Drop, and then at this moment didn't, but it's very true. She sucked her guns because she didn't like jump ship and run away, but she didn't partake in this strike. And I'm so worried in this next episode she's going to blame herself for Libba and thinking, I didn't
control. Oh, man.
Oh my God. That's a layer. Gunner. Golly. You're an onion.
Oh, yeah. Me and Tali, we're just on the same wavelength the whole way.
You are on it. I am living.
Okay. All right.
Are we going to talk about the obvious Raelle?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
Oh, about... okay. Yeah, let's bring that up. So she turns the corner to go find the driver of the truck and finds the last person she needs to see, which is Scylla.
Yes.
I mean, fair tactic by the hand of the Spree. Like, if you're going to throw someone off the game, that's the way to do it.
Right.
Yes.
But certainly it must have been cathartic for Raelle.
Yes. I wish it was Scylla. I wish it really was Scylla, because honey... That would have been the twist of the century if it didn't turn back into that person and she really did kill Scylla. Like, that would have just been like mind blown. Like, that would have been it.
She would not have been okay. I think it's, you're right, a bit cathartic in that she needed to almost test herself, could I deliver this finishing blow to the woman I love, because she betrayed me and my people and my belief, like my standard, just my side of the battle. Can I do it, or would I only be able to go so far? I need someone like Raya, Tali, or Abby to come back up and do it for me. So I think it's right in a cathartic sense of, I know if this would have been real, I just did that, and I could have.
Yeah. Do you think if one of the other people did it, do you think she'd be all up in her feels again? And she'd be like, oh my God, how could you? You know, she's gonna be dramatic again. So at least if she kills her, she has to blame herself.
Been stomping around in the puddles in her goulashes the whole rest of the
Oh my God.
Without question. But I do love that she had to come to grips with herself. She had to put the military to the side. She had to put the spree to the side. She had to put Scylla to the side. And she had to make the decision to fight for herself. That's what that represented to me. She was there alone with her thoughts, with the love of her life, quote unquote. And she really, really dug in and decided to make that decision without any bias or any opinion of anybody else. And that was such a point for her, for me.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I want to give another shout out, though, to Quartermain for something that we haven't brought up yet. With the Tali moment, where Tali gave her the intel and she said, and her response was, our intel says otherwise, Alder is giving us the go ahead. The wording of that I thought was very significant and very much open to interpretation. So I want to hear everyone's thoughts here. I took it as Quartermain trying her best to protect Tali from the burden of what were certainly going to be moral consequences. That she was being like, oh, no, you're just free. Somebody says otherwise, you don't have to worry about that. And kind of
that. I'm looking at Demetria's face. You know what I'm getting at
here? Gunner? Was I clear?
What are you saying?
I want to hear what you have to say. I hope I was clear and not misleading at all.
I took it very much of, Anacostia is the mama bear, and she's going to protect her young ones and say, the general says they're just spree. You may be misinterpreting it. The higher ups are giving the order. We have to trust that. And in the sense of, I think even Anacostia knew, I don't really know what Tali can see and can't see, but I have to convince her it's okay. Just go along with it. I'm going to deal with this later. Take the baggage off her, and I'm going to put it on my shoulders, and I'm going to hold her and say, what the hell is this shit? What is this? Yes.
That's what I mean.
See, I'm going to disagree. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I think, while I said that I'm loving Anacostia right now, I disagree, and I think that was the moment where she had to snap back and put the feelings aside and go back into military mode. Because obviously military mode, she has to protect her, you know, her higher up, her superior, which is General Alder. And I feel like she did that. And then we saw the development of that in the end when she was so torn up about it. Because she's like, you know, I just like went to bat for you and you totally like threw me under the bus kind of thing. So that's kind of what I saw. Like, I felt like she was really just like, I'm going to protect Alder because I know she's making the wrong call. But, and that's my duty as her, you know, as her lieutenant, as her soldier, is to protect my general. But I think at the same token, she did have the intention you guys are talking about of still wanting to protect her soldiers. But the bigger thing for me was protecting Alder.
Well, Demetria, before I let you give us the right answer, because I know you know it.
Ooh, I'm so losing.
For me, because it wasn't just that she said orders from Alder are saying to go ahead. You know, it wasn't just that. She also said, our intel says no one's in there.
Yeah.
And before then, in the chopper, she was being motherly. Maybe not Mama Bear, but just straight up motherly. And trying to, like, encourage every one of the people in there and be like, hey, you got this, Rael, you're strong. If you're worried about it, your team's got you. Like, she was really trying to give them support. Not like a hoorah, like, go get them, but just honest to goodness, foundational support. Mm-hmm. And then later, when things went south, like, she was very empathetic to her soldiers. So that's where I took it. Mm-hmm. So Demetria, was I right? Gunnar, I right? Or is Brian right? What happened?
All right. Anacostia was put in a position of loyalty testing. And in the situation that she was in, she was trying to make the best of it for everybody. And she's sorting through everything that she's seeing. First off, City Drop in her mind was a terrible, terrible idea. She understood why it had to happen. And she just wanted to make sure that everybody came out as unscathed as possible. Not being able to reach out and be the voice of reason. As you've noticed throughout the season, Anacostia is allowed in a lot of those rooms that other people aren't privy to. The biddies will be there. There'll be another general. And there goes Anacostia like, oh, so this is what I think, you know? she wasn't able to do that. So just trying to be the eyes, the ears, the heart, the mind, and the protector of everybody while she was in that situation, while putting what she thought to the side. Again, we've really had to deal with that this episode. Was definitely paramount for her. So you are all right. She was trying to protect everybody while protecting everybody. She needed to take that burden off her back. Callie's been carrying it long enough. She needed to protect Alder. Alder is her mama bear. And
raised
by Alder. There is a definite degree of loyalty there. And then on top of that, the unit. She's grown very fond of these girls. And yes, she has become a bit more matronly. She has come down with the veneer of the I'm strong, I'm structured when it's necessary. But right now, she needed to be that strength and protection by silence.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my God, okay. I felt that. I am living.
Applause. Yeah. Wow, let me know what the chat says about that. Oh, man. So I think it's fair that we can move on from that subject and get to the consequences of these actions. Because, yeah, Demetria, Quartermain was definitely put in a no-win scenario there.
Yeah.
And took the loss for herself. I'm using all of these cliches, but I don't know how else to put it. Rough position, and she went to go to address that with Alder. And then, oh boy. So like, I feel like the entire dynamic of this show has completely been upheaved by the one broadcast that Alder made. Tally has probably no idea who she can trust anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because Scylla is a spy, Quartermain held information from her, Alder's decision, like, and like you, someone pointed out earlier that she, Demetria, I think it was you, that she is the most unaccustomed to this world. Mm-hmm. So she has very little to hold on to in it. Beyond that, Anacostia probably doesn't really know what to do with trust anymore.
Yeah. She was torn up in the end. That one was like, oh, I wasn't ready for that, because she was so like, okay, like, oh, like, okay, again, the whole thing of, like you were saying, Demetria, with her decision between the two of them, because she had to, you know, obey Alder, and she had to just take a step back, but at the same time, she's so torn up, even more so about losing one of her soldiers. Like, I feel like, obviously, it wasn't the right decision, but if everybody came out unscathed, she would have been totally fine, but because they lost someone, it was a completely different story.
Absolutely.
And the matter of not holding the memorial because Alder didn't want that bad press coverage. And that's what I think is the moment. Because I feel like we are starting to see our girls go through a questioning phase, and they're going to start questioning the military, questioning Alder. And not so much make it now a narrative of let's investigate and just wreck the whole machine. Just more, we're going to figure out where these loyalties lie and what is going through their minds. And now even Anacostia is going, I trusted you, I went to bat for you. And not even like, I want this one thing, a memorial, just a matter of, okay, the right thing to do would be held a memorial. And Alder's like, that's going to hurt my reputation. That's going to make it uglier. And Anacostia sees it as, but the right thing to do is the memorial. And we're going to see now, hopefully, a challenge between Anacostia and Alder, I think.
Mm-hmm. Lita's death represented the death of trust to me. Everyone lost something in that decision that Alder made. And then I think that it was even more antagonized by the fact that she got in this press conference and made it like, you know, we'll take a moment.
Mm-hmm.
We did this. We did this. They did that. We win.
She wasn't even there, honey.
No blood spilled, no sweat. You know, you just sitting there doling out decisions and not having to be participatory in the repercussions. So, yes, this was definitely a shift in the matrix for all of the girls, as well as Anacostia. You know, you're starting to see some of those threads of unity really being pulled and plucked away. And I, boy, 9 and 10, y'all.
Yeah, I'm ready.
9 and 10.
Yeah, for me, watching that press conference, like, I was surprised, like, I was surprised for myself how on board I was at the beginning, because she brought up some points that, well, that's at the beginning, because she said, we got this intel about where they were manufacturing mass weapons, and it unfortunately backfired. Like, she said that there were mass casualties right off the bat when attacking or trying to infiltrate the armory, which was true. Yeah. That a lot of good soldiers died in one fell swoop from a surprise attack by the Spree. And they, like, so to me, there's all the spin you need. If you got to sell that the Spree are unpredictable and they take things too far and they cause mass loss of life, it was right there in that one moment. Mm-hmm. But to then take the second incident, which, like, there was already hardship, and there was already loss of life on both sides, and it was ultimately successful. And yes, it did prevent potential devastations and huge acts of terrorism later. Like, there was enough there that she didn't have to then lay it on thick and lie about it. And that's what gets me, is the lies were unnecessary. So yes, Demetria, why is she lying for lying's sake?
Because that president watching that press conference too, and she was going to have a whole lot of...
She had to
lie. Because first off, you know, when the other general was like, where are you getting this intel? How do you know about this armory? You're doing a whole lot in secret. And there's a whole lot of baggage that comes with that. So in an effort to keep people from asking too many questions, let's just go on and spread this. First, we're going to put the best lies are the ones laced with truth. She began with the truth. She embellished at the end. She's a brilliant
queen.
Golly.
Oh, with the art, with Witch Daddy. Yep, I'm here for her. No.
As a journalist, the second that press conference started, I knew she's going to lie about it. I thought she wasn't even going to mention the loss of the cadets, because I thought a bellwether unit is the daughter of our president bellwether. So I thought she wasn't going to mention it to be a matter of not even let the president worry about her daughter, because I think we were going to see that possibly, and see that President Bellwether was concerned for her daughter and her cadets more than she normally would be. And when she started lying about how the spree used the hostages and lost them, I just sat there. I said,
"No, better she's not the president is Ward.
Wade.
Yeah. General Bellwether is the
Bellwether." You know, even that, you know, having to explain to the general why she made some of the decisions that she made. She put her daughter in danger.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole lot of layers to that. So that lie was definitely necessary for her.
Yes.
And it highlighted her own intention. She had to make sure that everybody understood she still had this in control. She still was the one to lead the charge. And she made the right decision.
No, she's off sitting back at Fort Salem doing nothing.
Looking around.
It's
how about Adil and Abigail? Can we please talk about Abigail, because I'm dying?
Okay, yeah, right, please. No, because there was something I noticed about Abigail toward the end of the episode. I felt like we were all wrapping up and confiding. I was like, okay, I can save my Abigail thoughts for next season.
No, we have to talk about it right now.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, she, again, her trust has completely been upheaved, and it's not necessarily trust in other people, but this entire institution and essentially her purpose in life. And not only that, Demetria, I love that you pointed out that the loss of Libba is the loss of truth, because I didn't make that connection, but I did note that I believe this was the first time that Abigail ever called Libba by her first name, by not addressing her just as a soldier, but by as a person.
Yes.
And I thought that was telling of Abigail's shift in perspective.
Yeah, I agree too.
I've definitely been like, okay, because even in that moment, that's definitely true. They had their name callings, but if there was a name for her to call Swithe, it was Swithe, the Swithe. You Swithe, Swithe. But even with Anacostia going and talking with Alder, General.
I remember that delivery. I said, she's questioning everything now.
Yeah, now you're just a part of the process. You're not living it. You're not actually feeling anything. So yes, you are absolutely right. When she actually made the connection with the human nature of what this is and started to see that Libba was a great leader, she had to give her kudos. Like, Abigail really stepped down off the horse and walked with the
people.
And I absolutely was here for that.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It was a great scene. And like, to the point where when I saw that there was someone covered by a sheet.
I knew it too.
Oh, yeah.
I knew. Like, I was
course,
like,
of course it's Libba.
They just had to be friends in this one episode, and then bam, she's dead. Like, wow, honestly.
Yes, Gunnar?
It's just not how Ryan said. I knew the second we saw that scene, I said, that's why they've been friends. Well, even when they were joking and they had that moment when Libba was comforting Abigail before the drop to the mission and saying that you're strong. You wouldn't be my competition if I didn't think you were a real threat. And they both kind of were motivated. I said, Libba isn't coming out of this alive. She's not. Nope. Cool. And that's awesome. I know exactly what's under that tarp.
Right. Well, on a positive note, I love Abigail. Like, I'm here for it. The cuddle was like for me. Loved it. So fun. And I love just the comfort that he brought her. You know, obviously she went through so much. And I love how, I don't know, maybe I missed it, but he didn't like throw it in her face, did he?
No.
Right? No, he
so
didn't.
He could have totally thrown it back in her face. Like, I told you so. I told you this is what war does to you. But he just was there for her and just comforted her. So I love that so much. And I was like,
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
So everyone's peeked behind the curtain, so to speak, and are coming into the next episode with fresh perspectives. But before we get into predictions, Demetria, we would love to do a little Q&A with you if we've got a little bit of time left.
I'm down.
Great. All right. Gunner, let's start with you.
So I always love to talk to all your characters because I feel all the actresses and the amazing cast have learned so much about themselves through these characters. What would you say has been the biggest part of your journey with Anna Cossi, and what have you learned about yourself and your and her character and the development you both have grown through this process?
With the work that I've done over the years, I've played some really, really cool characters, and I've gotten an opportunity to grow into their strengths. This is one of the very first characters that I've ever played where her strength was developed through her vulnerability. Recognizing that you don't really know everything, understanding that not everything is what you thought, and being able to admit those to people that are quote unquote supposed to be learning from you is something that I think helps Anna Cossi become a more understandable character and something that you can relate to a little bit better. You love her militant nature. You love the disciplinary factor of it. But as you start to see her come into the mother bear and the more matronly role that she's in, you really get a better appreciation for the human that she is. And I absolutely love that about her. I'm a single mama. My son grown
up.
Hallelujah. But understanding what that struggle was for me and getting to apply that into this role was something that I absolutely cherish. So when people can say, you know, I see the mother part of her coming out, I see the disciplinarian part of it, and they make sense together, it was very fulfilling for me.
That's incredible.
I love that. I have a question from the chat as well, reminded me about it. Karen, thank you so much for this question because I totally remembered this was my favorite scene from last episode with Scylla, the interrogation scene. I want to just know, the chat wants to know as well as me, what was that like, you know, filming that from both like a character and actress perspective? How was that for you?
First of all, I want to give a shout out to Amalia. Mm-hmm. We met together at the test shoot. Like we were hired the same day within minutes of each other. We were sitting together when we got the call. We developed a bond within the waiting room before we got the audition done. And so to be in that scene with somebody that I absolutely adore as a person and as a talent, and to have built this world with her from the very beginning, and now I have to torture somebody.
Yes.
And respect. It was intense. Like we had to really, we had to find that line between love, hate, and understand that passion is the commonality between it. And so I think we came from very passionate places. When we got all set, we were like, yo, let's go get some food. Like I really do, you know, but she killed in that moment. And I love the choices that she made. I love the mood that was set by the DP. Elliot's writing was, again, creative, amazing. And you had so many layers to build off of. So that raw emotion being in that space, it took us a minute to come out of it. And usually when they yell cut, I'm like, all right, who wants Starbucks?
Yes.
It was not that. And as everything progresses, you'll see even more of that dynamic.
I love that. Thank you.
Well, on that note, we've mentioned a lot today about what we're looking forward to the next episode. I know Gunnar has. Brian, I didn't quite hear a prediction from you. So I want to get one prediction before we sign off for today. So what are you hoping to see in the next couple episodes?
I want to see a showdown between Alder and Anna Cossi. I feel like that's what's coming.
All right.
So I'm going to say, and I think the chat agrees with me on that too, because with, especially this episode, I think that that's what's going to happen next. I'm going to hold out for an episode 9 and 10 and we'll see what's going to happen. But I want Anna Cossi to come up and be the next general. So we will see.
Oh, that would be fun. Do you agree with that? Would you like to step into Alder's shoes?
I mean, I hope she ain't watching this, but I want her spot.
All right. Well, we'll just have to wait and see what happens next week. Demetria, thank you so much for being here again. You have brought a wonderful personality and perspective onto this episode, which again, this was such a significant episode that I'm just itching to see what happens next week. Thank you to our fans for being here. We appreciate you guys making us the ESPN TV Talk, for contributing to our conversation. Like, subscribe, ring bells, give stars. We appreciate all of that. It's what allows wonderful people like Demetria to be on our show because it's for everyone. Anyway, Demetria, where can everyone find you online if the fans want to get in touch with you further?
You guys can follow me at Demetria, the number 4 real on Instagram and Snapchat. I love the filters. And there is at Demetria. Oh, no, I'm sorry. At Demi McKinney. The website is DemetriaMcKinney.com. And I just want to give a continued shout out to all the people on the front line still with this COVID-19 thing going on. Thank you so much for what you are doing. Thank you so much for what you haven't done. And thank you for just continuing to be our first line of defense. We appreciate you. Yeah.
Shout out to the fixers, because this show is,
it
promotes the power and the value of people who are there to heal others. And boy, oh boy, is that a great time to see that on television.
Yes.
Bryant, where can everyone find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at TheBryantSantos, and catch me on AfterBuzz TV's Quarantine with the Stars.
Gunnar.
Thank you so much for all our frontliners and all everyone giving what they have right now during COVID-19. And you guys can find me on all social medias at The Gunner Thomas and on the Avatar The Last Airbender After Show as well.
Awesome. Guys, you can find me at Twitter at Kevin Allen Says, Instagram at Kevin Allen Graham. Once again, this has been an amazing episode. Thank you to everyone who's been a part of it. We will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.